Lucas on Life.
Hello, welcome to Lucas on Life. Thanks so much for joining me at the end of what I hope was a satisfying, happy Sunday. Now, tonight I'd like to talk about our relationship with tech. There's been a lot of conversation about that on the news channels recently. And I spent some time on this around a year or so ago, but with lots of talk in the press about AI and then the relationship that young people in particular have with their screens, I think it's worth returning to. Recently, I was watching a film that was shot back in the 1970s, and I realized that there was something very different about the crowd scenes. Now, obviously, the fashions, the hairstyles and clothing were very dated. The 70s, in my opinion, was a decade of great music and terrible fashion choices. Some of us can remember with some pain flared trousers, shoes to stagger around on with platform heels, and lapels on men's jackets that were so wide a gust of wind could sweep a chap off to an overseas nation. But there was something else that was very different about the crowd scenes, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it initially. The movie was set in New York, and people thronged Times Square, coming up from the subway, sat in restaurants. And then I realized what was so very different. You see, people were walking around, and they were actually looking around. There were no smartphones clutched in their hands. Rather than being glued to their devices, people were taking in the view of the Big Apple, New York. And let's face it, in 2026, it's rather obvious that tech is not just making an impact in our lives. Some of us are concerned that it's taking over. It was supposed to make life better. Just a few decades ago, we had to wait in front of the TV for weekly broadcasts. We had to turn to books or sluggish internet browsers on clunky desktops to get information. We had to rely on landline telephones for chatting with friends. And today, digital devices let us entertain, work, socialize, and access information anywhere, anytime. Technology has propelled us into an era of constant digital engagement, if we let it. With endless rewarding stimulation just a fingertip away, one would assume that boredom has become a rare experience, but the reverse has happened. There's been a concerning rise about boredom among young people from 2009 to 2020, revealed by national surveys. People are becoming increasingly bored, not despite all of our tech, but partly because of it. And all of this is making us distracted people. It's reported that on a typical day, young people receive a median of 237 notifications on their phones. Those notifications, we're going to talk about them more in a moment, they disrupt attention, slow reaction times, worsen task performance, and prompt people to turn away from their current activities to check their phones yet again. So tonight, here on Lucas on Life, let's talk about tech. Are we masters of it, or is it mastering us? I mentioned earlier notifications, the mingled blessing and curse of our internet-governed lives. Our watches or phones dutifully informs us that we have an appointment with an armed and dangerous dentist tomorrow, that our plane is running late, that rain is anticipated in 32 minutes, or that our heart rates are running a little high, probably because of that delayed plane. We're informed about breaking news, stock market fluctuations, and nudged by a reminder to pick up some milk at the supermarket. Notifications can even prevent future mishaps and tragedies. Later model cars not only beep us when we're wandering out of our lane, but automatically steer us back into safety and even tell us off if we're not paying sufficient attention to the road. Unfortunately, there are no notifications available to advise us that we're living in a beautiful moment, which is really frustrating. Days of sheer bliss when the sky is a deep blue, the sun warms but doesn't burn, and rich, easy laughter is shared with friends, those absolutely fabulous episodes are rare and they should be enjoyed to the full. Recently, Kay and I joined a gaggle of dear friends for a few wonderfully poignant days in France. We gathered together to be with our host, a close pal who had been given a terminal diagnosis. But there was nothing morose about our time together. We munched on almond croissants, apparently baked in heaven. We sipped rosé wine, drank coffee in the same cobbled square each morning, and laughed hysterically at stories shared late into the night. One evening, I glanced across the room at our friend and wondered at the sight of his huge smile, because despite that gloomy diagnosis and the discomfort of his illness, he was determined to soak up the gravy of this most precious time. As was I, except for those pesky notifications. Technology means that unless we take the apparently unthinkable step of turning our phones off, we're at the mercy of relentless intrusion. There's a price to be paid for being continuously available. The cost is that we become unavailable to what is right in front of us right now. In France, I had no idea that I was living in one of the best days of my life, one that I wish I could return to. Something similar occurs because of the rather fabulous cameras that are secreted into our phones. Watching a breathtaking sunset in Colorado, we marveled at God's genius with a color palette. Ribbons of rich burnt orange entwined with fluorescent reds trailed across the fading blues of the twilight sky. But glancing around, we noticed others who were so wrapped on capturing the perfect photo of the moment that they possibly missed the moment itself as they squinted at the sky-born masterpiece through their phones. And sometimes, of course, the sheer speed of life hurries us on, roughly shoves us forward when we should be stopping to look, to marvel, to worship. Annie Dillard offers a beautiful challenge. She said, "We are here to witness the creation and abet it. We are here to notice each thing so that each thing gets noticed. Together we notice not only each mountain shadow, each stone on the beach, but especially we notice the beautiful faces and complex natures of each other. Otherwise, creation would be playing to an empty house." Perhaps at the end of another ordinary day that might well be filed under the heading of nothing much happened, there are people who will inspire or nudge us into a giggle. There's music to soothe or quicken our hearts. There are still unmissable moments that we might just miss if we're not careful. Let's take time to take our seats when God is putting on a show, and let's pay attention to the road that we're on. We have been notified. We're thinking about tech, and let's face it, with all the tech that we have, unfocused and distracted is what most of us are. Allegedly, most people who use a tablet such as an iPad do so while watching TV, and half of tablet users while in front of the Gogglebox will visit social networking sites. Two-thirds will check their emails, and most will be browsing other sites all while watching TV. According to one academic, we're living in the age of infomania. Armed with a smartphone that serves as a camera, calculator, stock market scoreboard, web browser, email inbox, gaming console, appointment calendar, voice recorder, guitar tuner, weather forecaster, GPS, texter, tweeter, Facebook updater, music player, and flashlight, we're constantly multitasking. While having lunch with friends, we surreptitiously check to see what our other friends are doing, and even post photographs of the cheese and pickle sandwich that we're snacking on so that the universe can stand amazed in awe and wonder. And although we think we're doing several things at once, multitasking is a powerful and diabolical illusion. Earl Miller, a neuroscientist and one of the world experts on divided attention, says that our brains are not wired to multitask well. When people think they're multitasking, he says, they're actually just switching from one task to another very rapidly. And every time they do, there's a cognitive cost. And then according to a study at the University of Sussex, constant multitasking actually damages our brain. They found out that people who regularly multitask have lower brain density in the region of their brain responsible for empathy, cognitive control, and emotional control. And then other studies have found that multitasking reduces your productivity by up to 40%. So, as we're going to think about further in a moment, let's consider turning things off. Yes, turning off our phones once in a while, turning off browser notifications, turning off email notifications. We can attend to all of those things later. We don't necessarily need them right now. Why don't we build technology breaks into our schedules, both at work and at home? To be the most beneficial, they should be for a minimum period of 1 to 3 hours at a time, because that will enable us to engage with people or tasks in deeper and different ways. And then it's also recommended that we avoid all screens which stimulate rather than relax for the first and last hour of the day, so that we can begin and end with uncluttered focus. Stay with me here on Lucas on Life and allow me to share in a moment a few more reasons for us to just simply turn off our phones for a while. Well, as we've been thinking about tech this evening, let me consider with you 5 reasons for us to put our phones down for a while. As I mentioned earlier, it's a familiar and vaguely depressing sight. We're a culture glued, stuck firmly to our smartphones. Again, wander through any airport, sit on any train, and we'll see hundreds of slaves, people ignoring people, transfixed instead by the small screen that they clutch in their hands. As I mentioned, obviously technology can be a really helpful tool, including the internet generally and the smartphone specifically. But it shouldn't take over our lives. Whoever thought that our gods would be small, handheld devices before which we kneel, figuratively speaking, in humble homage? So let's do ourselves a favour. Dethrone that god, give our phones a rest, and for good reasons. First of all, that little screen might be sucking the life out of us. We tend to think that information is power, that we're invigorated when we're in the know, but that's a lie. In 1988, Gordon MacDonald wrote Restoring Your Spiritual Passion, a great book. He pointed out that we often live as emotionally drained souls because we're overloaded with choices and information. Now, that book was published 3 years before the dawn of widespread email and internet use. Now we're drowning, awash with much useless knowledge. Secondly, the world doesn't need to know that we like porridge. Before Facebook, we never called a friend after breakfast and said, "Guess what? I just had oatmeal. I got to hang up because I've got 4,377 friends to give a call to. Bye." The world will keep on turning if we fail to report that we've eaten, gone shopping, or have recovered from a season of constipation. Honestly, it will. Thirdly, while finding out about people, often we're missing out on people. Here's the news. Unless we're extremely selective, those hundreds or thousands of friends on Facebook, they're not really our friends. Most of them won't be snacking on the sausage rolls at the bash that follows our funerals. But if we half listen to the people that we're with while concentrating on the souls that we'll never meet, our actual friendships will go offline at high speed. Let's not miss out on engaging with interesting, colourful, needy, inspiring people in favour of the faceless, apart from the dodgy profile photo, on Facebook and elsewhere. Fourthly, life was meant to be about conversation, not a newsflash. X, formerly known as Twitter, is most often about declaration rather than conversation. But life was never meant to be a series of pithy pronouncements made in 140 characters or less. Let's not issue press releases, but have real chats instead. Finally, our phones won't feel hurt if we ignore them for a while. I've got a friend who's a wise, loving, and brilliant listener until his phone rings, beeps, or chirps. He is then compelled to answer it, even though he might be in a critical conversation with someone who's sharing a marriage crisis, a major career change, or a forthcoming surgery. There might be a person on your phone, but your phone is not a person. So let's all take control, be the boss, ignore it for a while. Being a machine, it won't get wounded, feel neglected, or withdraw into a sulky silence, not talking to us for 3 days. Believe me, it'll be ready to talk again whenever we are. Have a great week, one where we're in control of tech, rather than tech being in control of us. Lucas on Life.